Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Ched Amud Aleph. The Gemara says with the two dots, Tani Rav Yosef, She'ira Zu Kiruv Basar. So the She'ira, which we're discussing here, is the meaning of the words in the Pasuk, written by the Amar Ivriya, which the Gemara sees as a paradigm for any marriage, the obligations of the husband towards the wife of She'ira Ksuta Ve'onata. So in She'ira, what is the definition of She'ira? So he says, "Ukiruv basar," that is intimacy. Shlo yinhag ba minhag parsiim. He should not act with her like the Persians do. Shemishamshim mitotehem bilavushehem. That they have their moments of intimacy in their clothing. Misayle the Rav Huna, dam Rav Huna, haomer efshi el ani bibigdi vehi bibigda. Anybody who makes such a demand that our intimacy can only be while I'm dressed and she's dressed, yotzi vinotein ktuba. Then he can divorce her and give her a ktubah, because that's grounds for divorce. It's a demand that is not tenable in terms of marriage, that intimacy should be conducted in such a manner that they're both wearing their clothing.
That's what
She'er Bisaro, lo terva. So there, She'er Basar, you can read it She'era in one of two ways. She'era, which is Kiruv Basar, is She'era the clothing, or is She'era the lack of clothing? So over here, he's suggesting that the word she'er that is used by the Parshat Arayot is a reference to the lack of clothing. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu ani shebiyisrael, even the poorest amongst Klal Yisrael have to provide for their wife's funeral, and he gives the demands there of what it has to be, two flutes and the mekononot. Now michlal, the Tanakama savar hanelo. So it sounds like the Tanakama disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, and that Rabbi Yehuda here is coming to say, you have to do this, and the Tanakama disagreed. Hey, chidami, what exactly is the case here where they have this machloket? Ido orcha, if it is the way of her family, my time is the Tanakama, then what is the Tanakama who says, damar lo, that you don't have to do this? So now, in terms of orcha, her way, Rashi over here defines it, orcha and orche, the daughters of that family. He says the daughters of her family, and now we're going to see in a second his family, and it means the daughters in his family. Tosafot brings an alternative view here of Orche, that Orche means his way of burial, and then the extrapolation from him himself over to his wife. Although it doesn't read as well in the Lashon, it's much more difficult, but Tosafot brings from the Rabbeinu Tam such a suggestion. But the way that we'll read it like Rashi does, which is this refers to the girls of this family. So the girls in her family, if they are buried in this way, then why would the Tanakhama say that she doesn't get this? If it's not the way of her family, my time with the Rabbi Yehuda, then why does Rabbi Yehuda make this demand? Lo, tzricha, kagon de orchei didei, the women of his family do have this practice, v'lav orcha dida, but the women of her family do not have that practice. Tanakhama savar ki amrinon, when do we invoke the principle, which we're going to see later on in Ketubot, which is bi'ulat ba'u. Bi'ulat ba'u, we say that isha ola imbala. She is elevated. Her status is raised with her husband. Ve'en yoredet imo. But she does not go down. Meaning that if there are certain practices within her family, then those practices will remain intact, and the husband will have to support those practices. If there are practices in his family, as long as they are a higher status than the ones of her family, then the husband has to provide those for her. If it's a downgrade in any way, she does not have to follow the practice of her husband's family. So for instance, Rashi says over here, Rashi gives an example. He says, for instance, in her family, the women don't nurse. But in his family, the women do nurse. So the question is, does he have to provide her a wet nurse in order that she doesn't nurse? He says, well, the women in my family nurse, so why aren't you nursing? She goes, my family, they don't. So because ola imo, ve'enu yoredet imo, she has the right to say that I'm not going to nurse. Please provide me with a wet nurse. That minhag, or that practice of her family, is brought into the marriage, and he has to support that practice of her family. So this principle of bulat ba'al, ola imo, ve'enu yoredet imo, that she is elevated to him, but does not go down to him. So the Tanakhama believes, hani mile b'chaim, that's as long as she's alive. Avala achar mita, after she passes away, lo, that principle doesn't apply. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, afilu la'achar mita. Even after death, that principle still applies. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is demanding that the burial be up to the standards of his family, which is a higher standard. Whereas the Tanakhama says that he doesn't have to elevate that status. He doesn't have that right or that claim anymore to be olaimo v'ino yoreditimo, because that's with practices that have to do with living. It doesn't have to do with practices of burial. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, halocha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Halocha is like Rabbi Yehuda. V'amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, mi shinishtateh, person who has gone out of his mind, lost his mind, he's no longer able to conduct normal transactions, not able to lead his family anymore. Beit Din steps in, yordim l'nechasav, they go down to his estate, into his property. V'zanin u'mefarnesim et ishto u'banav u'bnotav v'davar acher. And they provide sustenance, provide the needs of the wife, the children, and something else, which the Gemara discussed. Samalei Ravina l'Ravashi, ma'ishna ma'adetanyo. How is this any different than the Braita that we learned? Mi shalach l'medinat hayam, someone who travels overseas, v'ishto tovat mizonot, and his wife is asking for her food, her sustenance, her ability to live. Beit Din yordim l'chasav, v'zanin mefarnesim et ishto. So Beit Din takes over the role as the basically executor of his estate in his absence to provide for his wife. Avalo banavu bnotav, but they do not do that for his children. Velo davar acher, and not for this other item. So Amalei, so he responds to him. Rav Ashi says, velo shani lach ben yotzei ladat, velo yotzei shelo vedat. There's a big difference between someone who leaves of his own volition and makes plans when he leaves, and he determines what he's going to do. So this individual left, and he didn't take care of this stuff. He left in a calm way. He knew he was leaving, and yet he did not provide. That means that Beit Din will enter the scenario or enter into the fray when there's an obligation. As far as his wife is concerned, that is an obligation of the ketubah to sustain and to provide for his wife. So Beit Din will go down to his property and make sure that his wife is provided for. On the other hand, with regards to his children, he has no obligation to support them. Since he doesn't have an obligation to support them, and he did not set up a mechanism to support them, we're not going to do it for him. We're not going to force him to do something that he himself determined that he didn't want to do. On the other hand, where he lost his mind and he's no longer able to lead his family, that's a case when it happened, let's call it suddenly, spontaneously. It's not something that he was planning for. And since he didn't plan for it, we're going to assume that most people would want to support their wives and their children. Unless he makes an option or opts otherwise, we're going to assume that he wants them to be supported properly, and therefore we're going to go into his property as executors of the estate and provide for his wife and his children, as opposed to the case, again, where he leaves of his own volition in a calm way and determines not to leave them that sustenance and those mizonot. So in that case, we say that whatever's an obligation, we'll do for him, which is the ketubah, that's a tnae ketubah, to provide mizonot. So Beit Din will enter the fray. Otherwise, we don't enter the fray. We'll not provide for the children. In terms of what he has to provide, as Rashi says, zanin is mizonot, which is actual food, providing, sustaining. And farnesin is levush v'ksut, is clothing and whatever else, dress, coats, anything else that they need in terms of presenting themselves. We're assuming there is shelter because his estate's still intact. We're assuming that the house is still there, or wherever they're living is still intact. It's really their day-to-day living expenses, which are important over here, and that's what we're speaking about. Now, what is this davar acher? And here, there's a little controversy about what the exact girsa is over here. Is my davar acher, or Tosafot has an alternate girsa, which is my lo davar acher, because depending on which version you look at. If you look back at Mar Ukva's statement says that he has to provide zanin u'mefarnesim et ishto banav u'bnotav v'davar acher. That's something he must do. In the statement of Rav Ashi, based on Medina Tayam and the question of Ravina, so over there, it says that lo davar acher, that did not provide. So it's a question of which side the Gemara is asking. Is the Gemara asking what the davar acher is? Or is the Gemara asking what the, not the davar acher is? I mean, it should be the same thing, but you're going to see because of the extrapolation from one to the other, it does make a difference. Because Rav Chista Amar zit tachshit, davar acher is providing tachshitim, which are jewelry, adornments, for his wife and for his children. Of Yosef Amar, it's staka. It's to provide staka, or do we collect? If the community is providing staka, or there's an obligation on the community, do we collect that staka out of his estate? So now, Manda Amar Tachshit, The one who says tachshit koshukein tzedaka. If we're going to say tachshit, then certainly it's tzedaka. Mandamar tzedaka. The one who says tzedaka va tachshit yavin la talon echale de tinavel. So over here, it seemingly follows the girsa of Tosafot. Tosafot says, what is the davar acher? But it's not just the davar acher, it's the davar acher that we don't provide. So that's the way Tosafot seems to say, and therefore he says, my lo davar acher. Although the Gemara doesn't have, the Gemara has the girsa of davar acher and then reads it as if it was not. Which is, Rav Chisda amar zeh tachshit. What we don't provide is tachshitim, jewelry. Rav Yosef says, we don't provide staka. Manda amar tachshit. The one who says we don't provide tachshitim, koshken staka, certainly not going to provide staka. If we don't provide adornment for the wife, we're certainly not going to provide for third parties, it's staka. Mandamar staka, the one who says that we don't provide staka, nevertheless, tachshit we do provide. We still provide tachshitim, yahivina la delo nechala de tinavel, because he doesn't want his wife to be disgusted again, not to be presentable. So he wants to give her that. So even if we're going to say that we don't provide staka, we still provide tachshitim. That's the way to read it if it's written in the negative form, what the not davar acher is. What don't we give? So reading that here, so what we don't give, so one says we don't give jewelry, one says we don't give tzedakah, and we say the one who says we don't give tzedakah still says we do give jewelry in order to provide the woman to look fine or nice. Rashi says, velinira mida amar mukva kaimi. Going back on the first statement, which is what is davar acher? Ve'ipchar garsinan. And therefore I flip the girsa. Manda amar tzedaka, koshukein tachshit. The one who says tzedaka, certainly will say tachshit, because Rashi is reading in the positive form, which says what we do provide. So the one who says we provide tzedaka, will certainly say we provide tachshit. Manda amar tachshit, the one who says we do provide jewelry, about tzedaka lo. Hatam tainam ad lo denechale nitenavel. Because over there, the only reason he's providing tachshitim is because he doesn't want his wife to be disgusting. But other than that, he doesn't want to provide tzedaka, he's not going to give more than that. So Rashi flips it onto the first case and then has to flip the girsa. Tosafot just changes the girsa of what we're trying to define here, which is not the davar acher, but the lo davar acher. And therefore the girsa reads this way. There was even a third girsa, which actually flipped it around and said just the opposite. That in the case here, he would be more likely to provide staka than takshitim. Why would he be more likely to provide staka than takshitim? Because shetanavel ishto. That is, a wife should be disgusting. She should not appear appealing or desirable because he's not here. He doesn't want men to be looking at her and taking an interest in her. And therefore, he doesn't have a vested interest in her looking beautiful. When he comes back, that's when he wants to have tachshitim. But right now, he has no interest in having her tachshitim. There's even a third girsa that looks at it from a different perspective, which is the perspective of him being absent. And in the case of his absence, then his wife being a takshitim or giving her a takshitim is something that he doesn't want. Although we see here that the difference is interesting. According to that opinion, if he's nishtateh, if he loses his mind, we do provide her with takshitim. On the other hand, when he goes to Medinat Hayam, we don't provide her with takshitim. The difference being that by Medinat Hayam, there's an expectation that he's going to come back and that it's going to matter. In the case of nishtateh, there is a probability that he's not going to be of sound mind again or not be able to deal with it, and therefore we provide her takshitim, because exactly what you're saying, this poor woman, for the rest of her life, she's not going to have takshitim, that's unfair to her. But in the case where he's going to return and he wants her to remain unappealing while he's away, then we don't provide takshitim in his absence. All right. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba and Amar Rav Huna. Mi shalach lemedinat hayam umeta ishto. Person who travels overseas and his wife passes away while he is overseas. Beitin yordim nechasav v'kovrim ota lifi kvodo. Beitin goes into his possessions, buries the woman based on his kavod, meaning that what would be the practice in his family? Lifi kvodo v'lo kvi kvoda. Only according to the practice of his family, not the practice of her family. Ema af lifi kvodo. Even according to his family. Hakamash Malon, from that, what do you see? Olahimo, veina, yoreditimo. Vafilu, liachar mita. Even after death, we say here that she gets the best of both worlds. It's the higher of what was in her family's practice or his family's practice. She gets the better of the two. So if her family practice was better, then that's what she gets. If his family's practice was better, then she gets that kavod. She never goes down. She can only be elevated. And here again, even after mitav, which would be supportive of the way that we are explained Rabbi Yehuda's position in our Mishnah. Amar Rav Matna, Haomer, imeita lo tikberua minechasav, shomim lo. If a person says, if she passes away, I don't want you to bury her out of my possessions. Shomim lo. We listen to him. So this is someone on his deathbed. The time of his death, he says, my wife, I don't want you burying her out of the monies of the estate over here. So the Gemara says, Maishna ki amar. What's the difference when he tells him not to do it? Nafle nichse kame yatme. Because what he's trying to do is preserve the estate for the yitomim. He wants them to inherit. And the obligation of kvura is out of the ketubah. So if, again, the woman has a ketubah, one of the things that is guaranteed to her in the ketubah is kvurata. Her burial, which we saw yesterday, was one of the items that kvurata tachek ketubata. Because of the nidunya that's brought into the ketubah, he agrees to bury her. Or, we saw this in Yevamot, the fact that he will inherit her if she predeceases him. For that reason, he becomes the obligated party in burying her, because otherwise the family won't bury her, because he just inherited all her money. So he took the nidunya, he's going to be responsible. But now, in this case, he passed away. So what's going to happen here? Over here, we're going to deal with the people who inherit her ketubah. So here is a principle called ketubat benin dichrin, which is that Chazal established that the male children born to a woman inherit her ketubah and the nidunya, anything that is placed in the ketubah. Because otherwise, a father would be reluctant to give his daughter gifts or presents to bring into the marriage, because there's a possibility here that this husband will take numerous wives, have children, and the people inheriting him, in the end, will be people that he has no relationship, not even his grandchildren. So the Chazal established something called the Ketubat B'Nichrin, which is that if there are sufficient assets in the estate, in order for each party to inherit their mother's ketubah, plus then divide up the remaining property, that's what happens. So what the obligation here is determined by whoever is the inheritor of the ketubah. So whoever inherits her ketubah, because he predeceased her, she will get her ketubah. Whoever is the inheritor of that right to her ketubah will then be obligated to bury her. So what he's trying to say is, I'm preserving the estate as a whole. Whoever is the obligation is devolves upon is the one who took the ketubah. Whether that is her father, whether that is her children, whoever it is that's going to inherit the ketubah in this case. Ki lo amar nami. Even if he doesn't tell us this, nichse kame yatme ramu. Why should we obligate the yitomim to bury her when they're not possibly not even her children? The yitomim here don't necessarily have to be her children. The people inheriting the father's estate could be children from another wife. Why should they be obligated to bury this woman when they're inheriting their father and the preservation of the estate? They have no obligation to do it. So why does it matter that he said something? If he didn't say that, we'd protect the yitomim and say whoever inherits her ketubah has to bury her. Ella, homer. It says, someone who says that if I pass away, I don't want you using the monies of the estate to bury me, then we do not listen to him. He doesn't have such a right to basically dump himself onto the tzedakah or into public funds and say that I want my kids to inherit the estate. In order to preserve the estate, I'm going to have the public funds pay for my burial. And in that way, my kids will inherit more. He doesn't have a right to do that. He doesn't have a right to cause a burden on the community just to preserve the estate for his children. So in that case, we don't listen to him, and we do take out of the estate in order to bury him. All right, now, next Mishnah begins. Lo'olam hi b'shutav ad shetikanes l'reshut habaal. She is always, the word la'olam is obviously going to play a role here. The Gemara will speak about it right away. She is always in the possession of her father. Ad she tikanes the reshut ha'baal, until she enters into the auspices of the baal, lin nisuin. For nisuin, for chupa. Once there's chupa nisuin, then she is under the auspices of the husband. Until that point, she's under the auspices of the father. If the father gives over his daughter to the messengers or the proxies of the husband, then she already has crossed over into the possession of the husband or into the auspices of the husband. If the father goes with the proxies, messengers of the Baal, or the messengers of the father who took the daughter and then met the Shluchei HaBaal, but they accompany them, her Hebrew Shutav, then she remains under the auspices of the father until she is given over to the husband. Misaro Shluchei HaAv L'Shluchei HaBaal. If, on the other hand, the Shluchei HaAv, the messengers of the Av, who took her and met the Shluchei HaBaal, hand her over to the Shluchei HaBaal, Harihi bishuta baal. Then she already crosses over into the possession of the baal. So in this case, the question is, when does this changing of the guard take place? Avsnaf kamino tar, the rights of whether it's the father or the husband in terms of the daughter. And that appears in numerous areas. Nidarim. Who has the right to be mefer nidareha? Is it both of them? Or is it just the husband at this point in time? With regards to mitziyata, her mitziyah, who does that belong to? Does that belong to the father? Does that belong to the husband? Maseyadeha, her production. Who does that belong to? The father, the husband. Truma, does she eat from her father's house? Does she eat from the husband's house? All of these items are going to be determined by under whose auspices she is considered. So the Mishnah here is setting the threshold by which we determine when she crosses over from the father's auspices into the husband's auspices. And basically the key element here is chupa, is that there is nisuin or chupa that she's taken into the possession of the house of the husband. So then whenever that takes place, that is when that transition happens. So the Gemara wants to know, my li'olam. What does it mean, forever? She's always. That's a very strong statement, and it obviously is coming to tell you as opposed to something else, which is the olam lafuke mimishnah rishona. That comes to exclude the mishnah rishona, which we're going to get to later on in the Masechta, but the mishnah rishona, that's none. Higiu zman velo nis'u. The time came, and they did not get married. This is a case that we actually saw in the first daf of the Masechta, that after Erusin, when a husband asks a woman for a hand in marriage, and she agrees, and they have Erusin, then for a betulah, he gives her 12 months to prepare for the marriage, and for an almanah, gives her 30 days to prepare for the marriage. After that time expires, what is the din? We actually discussed this on the first daf. What happens in the case of Ones? If the case where, because of some unforeseen thing, he's unable to now take her in marriage on that time, what obligations or what happens at that moment? So the Mishnah Rishonah says, at the point of 12 months or 30 days for the almanah, when his obligation is to marry this woman and support her at that point in time, if he doesn't do so, whether because of his own fault, whether because of some exogenous variable that prevents him from doing it, he is ochlot mishelo, they eat from him, vochlot bitruma, and they get truma. That's the Mishnah Rishonah. Afterwards, they said no, that that's not the case, but Mishnah Achronah says that we don't allow that to happen. Even at the expiry date, we don't allow her to eat from the truma of the husband, Kamash Malan, and that's what the Kamash Malan of the Mishnah is, le'olam. She is always in possession of the father until she enters the house of the husband, even if the husband, in a sense, defaults on his obligation to take her at the 12-month point or at the 30 days for an almanah. Still, nevertheless, and we'll see this again later on in the Mishnah, she's not entitled to eat truma. Now, why not? Why can't she eat truma? The Gemara later on will discuss the machloket d'amoraim as to why truma we do not give to a woman, even though technically, at the time of erusin, from the time of the halachic engagement, the woman is entitled to eat truma from her husband because she is then kinyan kaspo. She is a part of the family of the husband. Kinyan kaspo, not in a literal sense, like a transactional sense, but kinyan kaspo in the sense that they have a certain level of marriage or connection between them. She's allowed to eat truma. But nevertheless, we do not let her eat truma for one of two reasons. Either mishum simpon, which is one reason given, or mishum that she will feed it to her brothers and her sisters and her father. She is living at the time they were seen in her father's house. If the husband is giving her truma to have in her father's house, the problem is that she's the only party entitled to the truma. If you send her truma, in all likelihood, she's going to share it with her family. She's a nice girl, generous girl. She's going to share it with her family, but they can't eat it. They're not entitled to truma. So to avoid that problem, we say only eat truma when she reaches the house of her husband, because then you don't have that fear anymore. On the other hand, the secondary reason is simpon, which is the possibility that the husband will find something wrong with this woman. Remember, the courtship in that day did not last very long. Erusin might have been being done without knowing the girl, without seeing her very much. And therefore, the husband asked for this woman's hand in marriage. There was an agreement of sort for the erusin, but by the time he gets to nisuin, he does a lot more checking. Meaning that the courtship time or the checking time is now between the erusin and the nisuin. So during that time period, he'll find out if there's something about her he would not be interested in, something that bothers him about her. Mostly the Gemara talk about here are mumim, are physical things about the woman that might make him unwilling to marry her. And since that's a possibility, they would, becomes what we call mekach taut, which is that he doesn't intend to consummate this marriage, and he will unwind the marriage because he thinks that there was something wrong that wasn't disclosed at the time of Erusin. So that's called simpon. Because of that risk, which would unwind the marriage possibly retroactively, we don't allow her to eat truma until he is machnis le chupa. We've seen earlier on, we see it again there, that the chibata biyah, or the nisuin itself, is a period of time at which we say the husband either overlooks everything because of chibat biyah, or because of nisuin, he's already done the check, he would not enter into nisuin without having checked all this out. And that means that he's basically signing off on the deal at the point of nisuin. So at that point, we're willing to give her a truma. And so what this Mishnah does, it says the olam to support the Mishnah Achrona, not the Mishnah Rishona, which is that she doesn't get truma until she enters into the house of her future husband. Otherwise, she does not get truma. Tosafot asks a simple question, why do you need to tell us that? The Mishnah later on tells us that. Mishnah Rishona, and then Mishnah Achrona. The fact that it was a Mishnah Rishona means by definition it was rejected. That's what we thought at first. Mishnah Achrona is what the practice was afterwards. So why do I need you to tell me in this Mishnah Olam, oh yeah, it's like the Mishnah Achrona. It's obvious from the whole setup of that Mishnah that you're going like the Mishnah Achrona. So Tosafot over here says, Ken derech hatanaim, lashminu bekotzer, af agav dekvar yishminu b'makom acher. Even though it tells us explicitly somewhere else, in the Mishnayot, the Tanaim will give us hints to things like that. And you can see cross-references here at the beginning of Brachot. In the beginning of Brachot, the idea that mi she'nichnas kohanim lechol b'trumatan, when the kohanim go in to eat the truma, that's the zman for kriyat shema. And the Gemara asks, why are you telling us that? The Gemara answers, gav orche, titil, tell you when is the time that the kohanim eat truma. Now, there are Mishnayot, other places that tell you that explicitly. Nevertheless, the Mishnah there puts it in because it can teach you one extra thing. It gives you a bonus, additional item that it can teach you in a very shorthand form. So the Mishnayot will do that. Remember, these are memory aids. And many times you're learning Mishnayot, you can throw in something quickly that is additive and reminds you of something somewhere else, then it's helpful in that way. So that's what he says here, the word Lo'olam is doing, even though, again, that later on in the Masechta, on Daf Nun Zayin, when the Mishnah actually shows up, the Mishnah is explicit about the fact that there's a Mishnah Rishona, and then a Mishnah Achrona, and obviously the practice is like the Mishnah Achrona. All right, now, the Gemara says, Masarav l'shulchei abal, harihi b'shrut abal b'chulei. Amarav, misirata lakol chutz mitruma. Rav says that exchange is good enough to create a transition for everything except for truma. Truma is going to be left out of this. Rashi says, the time of the dam is shum simpon. He says that the reason behind truma is simpon is this, if he finds some fault with her, if he finds something wrong with her. That we will have to wait until the real nisuin happens. So that we won't do until the real nisuin because of the possibility that there's a nisuin ta'ut, and it's going to undermine or unwind this whole thing. Everything else, we're willing to transition at this point, but truma, we're going to hold off on. Ravasi amar af l'truma. Ravasi says, even for truma, Rashi claims here, the reason that Ravasi says this is because, hadamur rabbanan rusa lo tochal b'truma, why can't an rusa eat truma? Mishum shamim yazgula kos b'beit avia, b'tishkeh l'achia u'l'achil te'a. Because maybe they'll give her wine or something in her house and she'll give to her relatives. Here she's already on the road. They're not with her anymore. She's being transitioned, means she was passed from the Shulchei Av to the Shulchei Baal. This is no longer a chashash. So it shouldn't be an issue. So Rashi claims here the machlok between Rav and Ravasi is along the lines of what the reason is for not allowing Truma at the time of Erusin. If you think the problem is simpon, that will not be overcome until the time of nisuin. So passing her from the Shulchei Av to the Shulchei Baal is not enough. Whereas, according to Ravasi, who says the problem is that she might share with her family, that's gone now because her family's not with her anymore and that chashash has gone away. Tosafot says, wait a minute, all that arguing is only in the Mishnah Rishona. According to the Mishnah Shnia, that she still doesn't even get Shuma even after the point of nisuin, then everybody agrees that the problem is simpon. Because that's it. Even after the point in time where she's supposed to be at her husband's house, if he doesn't bring her into nisuin, she doesn't get truma. So then everybody agrees that it's simpon. If that's the case, how can you set up the machloket here based on our Mishnah, which is clearly talking about the Mishnah Achrona in the case, because it says lo olam. And here you're telling me Amoraim are arguing about this in a case that's not apparently an argument once you have the Mishnah Achrona. So he says, v'nir l'ri, the time of the Ravasi mishum simpon. Ravasi agrees that the problem is also simpon. Oshimir Masra to Lekala Mechash. After they Shluchei Av give over to the Shluchei Abal, you don't have to worry about it anymore. The Mistama Badkila. Because Mistama, they checked her out. In that the Baal wouldn't send his Shluchim to pick her up unless he was certain that he was going to consummate this marriage and have Nisuin. So we can, Anan Zadeh, the fact that he already sent the Shluchim, his proxies, to bring her back, that he already has done the checking and he's happy to take her as a wife, and therefore Simpon is overcome at that point in time. Obviously, Rav says no. Rav says that you wait until there's actual Nisuin, because there's nothing like seeing the woman himself, having the woman himself, and therefore Simpon only applies to he himself, not to his proxies. And then Tosafot discusses what the reasoning or other problems with this way of explaining it. Although Tosafot then, in defense of Rashi, says, maybe there is such a chashash, shemi yamazgu, ikad chashin and shemi tishkeh shluchei abal. That maybe there is this fear that she will give over to the shluchei abal. In that the shluchei abal came to pick her up, and they're going to give her truma to eat, and she'll share with the people who are her escorts. And maybe that's a problem. He says, even though, B'kuntrish lo perishkin, he says, Rashi doesn't interpret it that way, but nevertheless, he says that maybe that would be a way to get out of this problem, and assume that that issue could still be an issue all the way through to the time of the husband getting full possession of her, then maybe that would be an explanation over here that could overcome the problem. Etave Ravuna the Ravasi. Ravuna challenged Ravasi's explanation here after Truma. Some say it was Khir Barab that challenged Ravasi. Lo'olam hi b'shutav. Ashet tikanes l'chupa. She's always in the possession of her father until she goes into the chupa. The assumption being over here that chupa means literally when she reaches the house of the husband. Chupa is to him taking her into his house. So they're challenging Ravasi, who says that once the Shluchei Av give her over to the Shluchei Baal, then she can eat truma. How is that possible? Because the chupa is the determining factor, and chupa is only once she reaches the house of the husband. Amalu Rav, lava minilochu. Haven't I already told you? Lo tizlu batar ipcho. Don't ask people questions from Mishnayot that can be interpreted in one of two ways. You can never challenge someone from a Mishnah that has two possible interpretations, because just because you interpret it one way doesn't mean that the other party can't interpret the other way in his defense. And therefore you don't have a question that it will undermine his position, because he'll just simply say, I view it the other way. I hold the other way. He could answer you, Misirata zuhi knisata l'chupa. That is exactly what knisata l'chupa is. You are assuming that knisata l'chupa means that she ends up at the husband's house, and that she literally has to be there. What Rav Asi will answer is, that once the shluchei av give her over to the shluchei abal, that is chupa. That's the equivalent of chupa. So you're right, you need chupa. But the question is, what's the definition of chupa over here? You're saying that the definition of chupa is literally getting to the house of the husband. All Rav Asi will say to you is, yes, I agree with you, it's chupa, but chupa happens at the point of exchange. From the Shluchei Av to Shluchei Baal, chupa is simply the coming into, quote-unquote, the possession of the Baal. It doesn't mean that she literally has to end up in his house. She just has to be already in his possession on the way to his house. That's already called chupa. Ushmol Amar, Shmuel says over here, the Yerushata. That when we see over here that Masar Shluchei Av, the Shluchei Baal, what transition at that point? Yerusha. That's what changes over at that point. Reish Lakish Amar, Liktubata. That translations at that point is Liktuba. So now Rashi over here takes an interesting stand. Rashi says, when Shmuel says that it's enough for Yerusha, says that Mesira is enough that if she dies on the way now, the husband will inherit her Nedunya. The presents or the gifts that the father granted into the Ktuba was an assumption that the marriage would be consummated or taken to fruition. The passing from the Shluchei Av to the Shluchei Baal, according to Shmuel, is enough that the father's already given the gift. The gift is given at that point in time. Therefore, she dies on the way and never reaches the house of the husband. He still will inherit her. Kevan de Masra, because since he handed over, Achule Achel Av Mehashto. The father already forgives or really grants the rights to that property of the husband at that point in time. Machmad Kiruv Nisuin. Because we're so proximate to the Nisuin that at the point that he gives her over, that is the point where he basically relinquishes and says she's getting married at this point. Aval, Litruma ulafarat nidareha. With Truma and Havarat Nidarim, Shlob Shutfut, Ulamitziata, or Mitziah, Vein Alamishum Eva. and mitziyah, all these things are because of eva. Vakati leka lamecha shlachi. You don't have to worry about that because she's not present with the husband yet. Then lo mahani misira ki chupa. Misira doesn't act like chupa. So Rashi claims when Shmuel says over here that the transition is for Yerusha, it's Yerusha as opposed to anything else. Everything else remains with the father because the access to the other items is only so that the husband doesn't get angry at his wife or doesn't upset at his wife. Well, she's not there yet. Until she gets into his perimeter within his world, then it doesn't matter. And the father retains control over all these other items except for Yerusha. That's the way Rashi reads it. And the same will be true with Reish Lakish's statement about Ketubata, which is, Humahanya misirav asha kaba yishas the milta. And then the Gemara will ask its question. Tosafot, you can say, clearly takes a different approach. Well, Amar Yerushatalik, Tosafot says, Lo ata lafuke hafaret nidarim. It's not coming to exclude hafaret nidarim. Shmuel is additive, not exclusive. The way Rashi means it is Shmuel saying Yerusha and nothing else. Tosafot is saying that he's saying Yerusha, that's on top of the other items. On top of hafaret nidarim, on top of the other items that are clearly passed over. V'nira du'a din mitamelo. And he says even he'll become tamei for her. Came into afko rachmana miskilo lechenek. Because at that point in time, there's a transition for the girl that if she has an extramarital affair, once she's left the possession of the shluchei ha'av and got to the shluchei ha'baal, she switches from skila for an ara murasa over to chenek for an isha or an eshet ish. So that transition's enough. That should imply for midoraita for burial. Elo, the only thing he's coming to meute is truma. The only thing he's coming to exclude is truma. For everything else, it's transitioned. And he says the same thing with Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish also agrees that everything's there. And Reish Lakish maybe is just coming to exclude the position of Shmuel. For Ketubah, yes, but Yerusha, no. Or he says that Ketubah and Yerusha. And that's a question of whether he's saying Ketubah, yes, Yerusha, no. Or he's saying that Ketubah, yes, and Yerusha, yes. It's a question of what he's saying here when he's speaking after Shmuel. Alright, so here you have a machlok between Rashi and Tosafot as to what Shmuel and Reish Lakish's statement does. Are their statements exclusive, meaning only these items, or they are additive? The way Tosafot reads it is that it's on top of everything else that we spoke about, except for Truma, and Rashi looks at it as being exclusive, it's this and nothing else. Alright, now, Ketubata Maihi. What is this Ketubah that we're talking about here that Reish Lakish thinks transitions at this point? Diameta Yaritla. What, if she passes away now, he inherits her? Hainu Shmuel. That's exactly what Shmuel just talked about. Shmuel talked about Yerushata. So why is Ketubah different than that? Amravino Lomar Ketubata Me'acher Maneh. This is the transition point from which she's considered to be a Nisuah. And therefore, if she is divorced or Nitamein, widowed, from this point in time forward, she's classified as an Almanah, and the Ketubah she will receive from the next husband will be a Maneh. So this is, even though there's no Bi'ah over here, simply Nisuin, that's enough to create a transition by which her next husband will only give her 100 zuz, not 200 zuz. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, da amrei tavayu. Misira lata lakol af lichuma. So Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina say, the transition is for everything, including chuma, similar to what Ravasi said before, that the misira is basically equivalent to chupa, and since equivalent to chupa, everything transitions to that point. Meitavei. Is that really true? Halacha avim shluchei abal. If the av accompanies the messengers, the proxies of the baal, oshal chol shluchei avim shluchei abal, or the messengers of the av accompany the messengers of the baal, osha ayta lachatzer baderech, or she has her own little courtyard on the way that they're passing by, v'nichnasai imo laluin, and she sleeps there, they stay overnight there, even with her husband. There, she stays overnight. Afopi shektubata bebeit bala. Even though her ketubah is sitting in her husband's house, meita, if she dies, avia yorsha, her father inherits here. What's clearly being said over here in the Tosefta is that there was not a transition. The father retained possession over this girl, either because he accompanied her, or because his shluchim accompanied her, or because she stayed in her own chatzer, which actually makes it that it's not chupah, because chupah is taking her into his home, not her going into her home. Okay, Masar Av, the Shluchei Abal. On the other hand, if the father gives her over to the Shluchei Abal, O Shemasu Shluchei Av, the Shluchei Abal, or the messengers of the father give her over to the Shluchei Abal, O Shaita Lo Chatzer Baderech. He had a courtyard on the way. V'nich Nisayimo L'shem Nisuin. And she enters that Chatzer L'shem Nisuin. Even if her ketubah is still at her father's house, meita, if she passes away, bala yorsha. So then her husband inherits her. The Tosefta says, that's only true by Yerusha. She doesn't eat truma until she enters the chuppah, which clearly means whatever happened here was not chuppah, and therefore it's limited. Whatever happened at that transition point is limited, and the chuppah means going back to his home, and truma will not start to that. Tiyufta de kulu tiyufta. So Gemara says, tiyufta de kulu tiyufta. This is a problem for all of the positions we've seen until now, except for, Rashi says, Shmuel. Anybody who argues on Shmuel is now in a problem because the Tosefta seems to support Shmuel that the only thing in the transition is Yerusha. This is Rashi the Shitato, that Shmuel's position is Yerusha and nothing else. According to Tosafot, who says that Shmuel is this plus, then it seems to be a question of all these positions here because the Braita, the Tosefta, seemingly excludes Truma from this transition. And that may be the position of Rav, and it seemingly is the position of Shmuel, but for everybody else, it's a problem. Where it says, Hagufa Kasha. First of all, wait a minute. How can you bring a question from this Tosefta? This Tosefta is internally inconsistent. That if she goes to stay overnight with him in her chatzer, time of the Lalin, Hastama, if it wasn't for that point, but she just went in without saying anything, the Shem Nisuin, then we would assume it was Nisuin, even though it's her chatzer. Ema Seifa. Nichnasa imo l'shem nisuin. She goes into his property l'shem nisuin. Then it's nisuin. Hastama. If they didn't say anything, then it's lalin. Then it's just asleep and there is no nisuin. Amravashi, stame, stame, ktane. The Braita or the Tosefta is saying what the stam case is. In a case by her property, her chatzer, the stam is lalun. That they're sleeping over. They're not having nisuin. Since it's her chatzer. If they stop in his chatzer, then the assumption is that it is l'shem nisuin, not to stay over. Stam chatzer dida lalin. That's what it's saying, the Tosefta. Her chatzer, the underlying assumption, unless articulated otherwise, is just to stay over. Stam chatzer diday. If it's his chatzer, then it is l'nisuin. So again, even though there's no bia over here, even though she's not nivala, there is still nisuin over here because it went into his property. And that will be considered to be nisuin because she slept over in his quote-unquote house. And that's enough to create the nisuin. Tana, masara av l'shulchei abal v'zinta. If the av gives her over to the shulchei abal and she has an extramarital affair then, arizu b'chenek. She is subject to a penalty of an ishet ish, not of a naraha meruasa. Meha na hanei mile. Where do we know that from? Amravami barchama makra. Liznot Beit Avia. It says that the cases of Nara Meruasa is a case where she was Mizaneb Beit Avia, when she's in her father's house. Prat, the Mishamasar Av, the Shulchei Abal. God comes to exclude the case where the Av gave her over to the Shulchim and the Baal. Veima Prat, she nichnasa the Chupa v'lo nivala. Why don't you say here, it comes to exclude a case where she entered the Chupa, but then I had Bia. I mean, you can have different stages along the way here where she's partially transitioned, but not completely transitioned. So one of those is the transition that we've been talking about in our Mishnah, which is where the father or the shluchei of the father give her over to the Baal or the shluchei Abal. That's one transition point. The next transition point is literally when she gets to the chuppah, when he takes her into his house, but even though he hasn't had biyah with her yet. So the Gemara is asking, which is the transition point? What's the natural transition point? And then there's no beit aviyah, what does that come to exclude? That's the Gemara's question. How do you know it comes to exclude the transition point of passing her from one to the other? Maybe that's from the point of nisuin, but prior to consummation of the marriage by via. So Amarava Amar Li Ami, Ravami said to me, Chupa behejek tiva. Chupa is explicit. Kie na'ara bitula mi'urasa li'ish. Why the pasuk lays out for you the character traits of this woman who's going to be subject to skila. Three things that it says about her. Na'ara, bitula, and me'urasa. Three things. Na'ara velo bogeret. Nara comes to exclude a bogeret. Bitula comes to exclude a case of bi'ula. Mi'urasa velo nisua. My nisua. What is the case of nisua over there? Ilema nisua mamash. If you say nisua means literally bia, then hainu bitula. Then how is that different than bitula, not bi'ula? How is mi'urasa then different than the case of bitula? I mean that if you're making them identical or you're making them parallel, then what is that? Elalav, shenichnasa l'chupa, velo nivala. must be the case of Nisuin is a case where they have Nisuin without Biyah, without consummation, and therefore that's already excluded. It's explicitly excluded from the case of Nara Murasa. So again, Bi'ula by Nisuin, that's clear, because she has to be a Bitula. Nisuin without Biyah, that's also here from the Pasuk, because it says Nara Murasa, not Nisua. So that's already excluded. So now, Luznot Beit Aviyah, what does that come to exclude? Must be from the point, the transition point before that, which is Misirat Av L'Shulchei Abal, or Misirat Shulchei Av L'Shulchei Abal. And that transition point already takes her out of the Mita of Skila and brings her into the Mita of Chenek. She's classified as an Eshet Ish Mina Torah for the death penalty. Okay, we're going to stop over here at the bottom of Memchet Amud Bet.